And then Yudhisthira, the tunnel is finally ready, and Yudhisthira decides that they had better take the initiative rather than waiting for Dhritarashtra's agents to act. So Purochana has a friend who's also an evil person engaged with him in this, and she's a woman and she has 5 sons. And they invite Purochana and the woman and her five sons all to a big feast, and they feed them lots of wine, which has been spiked with a sleep-inducing drug. And then after this woman and her 5 sons and Dhritarashtra's agent all pass out from the excess of wine, then Yudhisthira himself sets the palace on fire. But as soon as he sets it on fire, the family goes into the tunnel and they escape out through the tunnel, and the building immediately goes into enormous flames, and the 7 people inside of it are incinerated in the fire. But the Pandavas have actually escaped. And then others, the citizens, all rush to it, but nothing can be done because the flammable materials are so quick to ignite. And finally, when it's burned and it's cooled, the agent of Dhritarashtra, the miner, sort of looks around carefully, and he sees that the tunnel had been opened and then debris has collapsed into it, and they count the bodies of the 5 men and the 1 woman, and then they announce to the world that the Pandavas have been killed in this tragic accident. And Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana have to hold a funeral service, and they have to act so distressed. But of course, secretly, they're overjoyed. And meanwhile, the Pandavas have escaped underneath, and they get to the river, and they suddenly find waiting for them is a ferryman and a boat. And he said, every night for many months, I have been coming to this river. He said, I received a message from Vidura to wait here every night, and that one of these nights, the Pandavas would come, and that I would have the privilege of taking you across the river. And then he also told me that I must send word to Vidura, but never speak of this, that it happened. So Vidura gets word that the Pandavas have escaped, and he sees that the one who is so truly distressed is Bhishma, who had looked to the Pandavas. He's the ego, and he had looked to the Pandavas as the spiritual force to eventually rescue him. And he's just heart sick to be trapped here only with Duryodhana, who represents material desire, and all his aspirations for freedom are dashed. And Vidura sees how sad he is, so he whispers in his ear that, do not be dismayed. I have reason to believe that the Pandavas have escaped. But they keep the knowledge to themselves. So now the Pandavas have to go into hiding, because once again they realize that Duryodhana is out to kill them, and they know that they flee into the forest, and they meet the sage Vyasa, who of course, as a sage in charge of the development of the planet, is keeping track of how all these forces are working. So he intersects the Pandavas, and he speaks to Yudhisthira and to the brothers, and he gives them advice. He says, the time is not ripe yet for you to assert your power, that you must wait in abeyance, and then the time will come. Now, this is also true advice sometimes for spiritual battles that we have to fight, isn't it? Even though ultimately we know that the spiritual dimension of our nature may triumph, we have to pick and choose the right moment for that battle. If we confront our own faults and our own delusions prematurely, often they will defeat us. Yogananda himself said, the better part of wisdom and valor is when you're faced with a test that you know you can't pass, is to run away. It's a very interesting statement, because you don't want to develop a habit of being defeated. Better to avoid the battle if you know you're going to lose than to face it when defeat is certain. So Vyasa advises them, the time is not right. And he says, you know, and he gives them advice that's good for everyone. He said, even the virtuous suffer sometimes. Nobody's life is unalloyed, uninterrupted good fortune. You know, misfortune comes even to the best and most virtuous of people. So he says, just face it calmly, face it bravely. So once again, we think, well, you know, sometimes, yeah, we just have to go and hide in the forest for a while. Too much has happened to us. We have to go incognito. So he suggests that they go live in this town called Ekachakra. And just hide out there, waiting for a more auspicious moment to reveal that they're still alive. And then there's a lot of little adventures thrown in here, and here's one that is interesting. While they were resting in the forest, passing through the forest, they came upon this beautiful lake, and the five brothers and their mother, Kunti. And they were weary from making their way through the forest and traumatized from the events of the past day, so they camped there for a time and decided to rest. Unknown to them, however, that lake was under the control of a fearsome Rakshasa. Now, Rakshasa is a particular kind of demon who appears periodically. Rakshasas have a great deal of power. They can change their form, they can look beautiful, they can look ugly, they can fly, they can fight at night, and only very powerful mortals have the capacity to fight against Rakshasas. The dark forces are divided up and characterized just as the light forces are too. So this Rakshasa, whose name was Hidimba, had a sister whose name was Hidimbi. Okay. And Hidimba sent his sister Hidimbi to kill the mortals that he found trespassing in his area and to bring their carcasses to him so he could eat them. Rakshasas are, you know, fearsome creatures who eat other creatures. And so Hidimbi had carried out this duty for her fierce brother many times before, and she crept up to where they were camping. But when she got there, she saw Bhima. Now, Bhima had a magnificent physique, and he was, you know, twice or three times the size of an ordinary man, and he had these wonderful muscles, and he just radiated this great strength and this impulsive, powerful energy. And Hidimbi was immediately struck in love. And far from wanting to kill this mortal and take him home to be her brother's dinner, she wanted to win this mortal man to be her own sweetheart. Now, a Rakshasa in his natural form, or her natural form, is really quite ugly to the human eye, but they have the power to transform. So she transformed herself into this delicate and beautiful maiden. And she came to him and she said, "You know, I find you the most wonderful man, and I want you to run away with me and come and live with me." She said, "I'm very powerful. I can provide everything we need. We can live in comfort and joy effortlessly for the rest of our lives." Bhima said, "How can you make such a proposition to me?" He said, "See, my brothers and my mother, we're fleeing for our lives. I couldn't possibly desert them merely to go off with you." She says, "I am a maiden who is offering myself to you. It is not appropriate of you to reject me. This is not right. This is not chivalrous." Once again, Bhima says, "I'm sorry, I simply can't." And he finds her attractive, but he says, "I can't. I just have this other duty." Now, meanwhile, Hidimbi's brother, Hidimba, is very hungry, and he wonders what's keeping her, because it really should have been a very simple matter to dispatch these mortals and bring them. So he comes crashing through, and all of a sudden, Bhima is confronted with this beautiful maiden on one hand and this terrible Rakshasa on the other. And Hidimbi says, "Oh, no one can fight my brother. We must flee." And Bhima, of course, is afraid of no one. And so he takes on this Rakshasa, and this terrible battle ensues, so intense that it wakes up his brothers and his mother. And they wake up to this very strange sight, which is Bhima fighting fiercely with this Rakshasa while this young love-struck maiden is standing on the side admiringly, and they're just watching this battle take place. And of course, Bhima is invincible, so he defeats Hidimba and kills him, which Hidimbi doesn't mind all that much, because she's been oppressed rather by this brother all this time. And meanwhile, Kunti is observing, and all the brothers are observing, that this maiden seems quite enamored of Bhima, and they begin to tease him a little bit. And Kunti goes and speaks to the maiden, and she confesses that in fact she's quite smitten with Bhima, that Bhima has been unwilling, out of a sense of duty to his family, to accept her proposal. And Kunti feels, well, it's not necessary for him to refuse. You know, it's not chivalrous for him to refuse. And you understand that the men had many wives in these periods of time. And by now she can also see that Bhima is quite smitten by this woman, knowing that she's also a Rakshasa, but Bhima's a bit of a character himself, so it doesn't matter. And so they make an agreement. And he says, "Well, I will be your husband, and I will stay with you until we have a son. And then I must go on, because my duty lies elsewhere." So they go off for a time, and after a period of time, a great and powerful son is born. It was Bhima's son with this Rakshasa woman, and his name is called Ghatachoka. I don't know why the people are called these things, but that's his name. Okay? And he becomes very important because Gatakocha is his name. Because later on, when the great battle is fought, all the sons and all the relatives and all the allies come together. And this great Rakshasa, half-human, half-Rakshasa warrior, has powers that others don't have. And at a critical point in the great battle, when Dharma has been so disregarded that they continue to fight even after the sun has set, which until then was just such a dishonorable thing to do. No one had ever done it. But this is the beginning of Kali Yuga. This Rakshasa has the power at night. He can fight at night in the ways that mortals can't. And he can fly through the sky. And his energy becomes very important in the defeat of the evil forces. Okay, so now, after that little adventure has passed and the son has been sired and is launched in his life, Bhima has to leave his heartbroken sweetheart, Hedimbi, but she knew that was the bargain, and he goes off with his family, knowing that he'll see her again and he'll see his son. And they go hide, they disguise themselves as Brahmins, and they become humble beggars, and they go into this town and they take up humble lodgings, and every day they have to go out and beg for their food. And Bhima, being so much bigger and more, has his appetite is so much larger, half of everything they beg goes to Bhima. And finally, a potter in town makes a huge begging bowl which Bhima carries around, and it enables him to have more of what he needs. But they go out every day and they beg, and then they divide what they have and share it with one another, and they live quietly this way for some time. And then one day, they hear that the family from whom they have been renting their dwelling is a man and his wife and their son and their daughter. And Kunti hears all this weeping and wailing going on in the house, and there's a sort of argument going on. And the father says, "I will go. I will be the one who will go." And the mother says, "How can we live without you? The children need your protection. I am the one who must sacrifice myself." And then the son says, "No, I am the one." And it turns out that this town is plagued also by a terrible Rakshasa. And this monstrous Rakshasa used to come randomly into the town and kill people and take them away to eat them for food. And finally, the town made a bargain with the Rakshasa, which is once a week, one family would sacrifice one member of their family, and that person would, the family would fill a cart full of food, and then that individual would drive the food to the Rakshasa's cave. The Rakshasa would eat the food and the person, and in this way, the town would not be tyrannized anymore. So, unfortunately, the lot had fallen on this family of four, and they were talking back and forth about who should sacrifice themselves. And finally, they all decided that none could live without the other, and so that all four of them would go. And Kunti said, "We have taken your hospitality and lived in your home all this time." She said, "It's not right. I will volunteer. I have five sons. You have but one son and one daughter. I'll volunteer one of my sons." And at first they refused to accept her generous offer, but she absolutely insisted. So when her sons came home, she told them what she had done, and Bhima, of course, was the one who wanted to go, not the least of which is because he got a whole cart full of food. So the woman of the house filled this cart with delicious food, and Bhima went off pretending great sorrow because they're masquerading as Brahmins. You know, Bhima's reputation is well known, and they can't expose. A Brahmin would not have the power to fight a Rakshasa like Bhima has, and they're hiding out now. They're still keeping their identity secret. So Bhima goes off, and they pretend as if it's a sorrowful occasion, but no one is concerned for Bhima's well-being. And he gets to the cave of the Rakshasa, and before he announces his presence, he realizes he has this whole wonderful cart of food, and he realizes that if he spills the blood of the Rakshasa, he will be polluted and will not be able to enjoy this wonderful meal. So it's necessary for him to eat it first. So he sits quietly outside the cave of the Rakshasa, and for the first time practically since they've been there, he has all he wants to eat, and he's very, very satisfied. And just as he's finishing, of course, the Rakshasa sees and bellows out and accuses him, "What are you doing? That food belongs to me. This is my town. Who are you to flagrantly disregard the agreement the people of that town will pay? And Bhima just says, just a moment, I'm not quite finished. And then he finishes what little food is left, and then he engages the Rakshasa, and of course, after a fearsome battle, he wins. And then he takes the mangled form of the Rakshasa and he puts it in front of the gate so that the people in the town will know that they are forever free of this Rakshasa. Then he dons the clothes of a Brahmin again and disappears back into the house. Now, that little bit of action was exposing themselves a little bit, and they knew it was a little bit dangerous because word would spread. And they also knew that they, to a certain extent now, would be regarded very differently in this small town. And right at the same time, a great event is happening in another part of the country, and word reaches them. And this is now Drupada, the king who was defeated by Drona, who resolved to have the son to kill Drona and the daughter to give to Arjuna. It's time for the daughter to be married. And so they're going to hold, remember the ceremony that we've had before, the Swayamvara. And that was where, remember, Bhishma went before and he got the three sisters, and one of the sisters was already promised. Well, Draupadi is going to have a Swayamvara, and her brother Drishtadyumna is going to preside over it, and her father. And Drupada has heard rumors that the Pandavas are not really dead. And he wants to draw, if they exist, if they're still alive, he wants them to come to this great event. Now, this is an event in which the woman gets to choose her own spouse. And she can set any standards that they like. It can be a competition of skill, or she can just simply choose by any standard that she wants. It's her decision. She offers the garland, and that becomes her husband. Well, so the runners are going out, and they're talking all about this great Swayamvara that's going to take place, and that the Draupadi is the most exquisitely beautiful woman in all of the land, and the family of Draupadi is very powerfully placed, and he just wants the word out just in case, you know, that Arjuna is somewhere. So as soon as the brothers hear about this, Kunti senses that they all have this desire to go and compete for this bride. And so she doesn't want to embarrass them or force them to have to ask. So she says, this town is growing tiresome. She said, this event seems interesting, why don't we go? And in this sort of delicate way, she spares them the need of having to assert their own will against their mother. So they go to this extraordinary event, and everyone is there, including Krishna. This is the first time Krishna enters the story. Okay? Because Krishna knows intuitively that the Pandavas are still alive, of course. And he has come to this event because he knows that Draupadi is destined to be the bride of Arjuna. And so he's there, and he's in the audience, and he's watching this crowd of people come, and he's with his brother, and he's making comments to his brother. And suddenly he sees, sort of one at a time, these five extraordinary individuals disguised as Brahmins, but whose radiance and power does not seem at all Brahmin-like. And he sees that they've all come in, and he says to Balarama, see, Arjuna, Yudhishthira, Bhima, like this.